This is Broadway to Brazil, the remarkable story of Corinthian Casuals, the English non-league club who took football to the world.
In 1898, the Corinthians broke their own code and agreed to compete for silverware for the first time. They did so in a showpiece game played between the best amateur and the best professional team in the country. The winner took the mountainous Sheriff of London Shield, an oak leviathan too big for any captain to lift in celebration. But since the club were forced to sell the Shield in 1996, its whereabouts have been unknown to Corinthians and football historians alike. We set out to track it down in The Search for the Shield.
Wore the old, or 18, whatever the year was, we wore the long shorts and old Corinthian tops.
You wore a retro kit for the game?
Yeah, it was retro, yeah.
It was difficult knowing what to do with it, because I don't know whether you ever saw a photo of it, but it was an ugly thing.
I couldn't believe I'd never seen in my life a shield so big. And actually, I would bet that this must be the biggest one that there is in the world.
Hello, listener, and welcome to episode 5 of the second series of Broadway to Brazil. I'm once more in the Corinthian Casuals boardroom. I'm once more joined by my co-host, Mr. Dominic Bliss. How are you, mate?
I'm very well, thank you.
So, Dom, today you're going to be telling us a little bit about the Sheriff of London Shield. Tell us about this intriguing-sounding trophy.
Yeah, I've been on the trail of a giant shield, the Sheriff of London Shield, which the Corinthians first competed for back in 1898, and which we sold 100 years later at auction when we were in serious financial trouble. And since then, nobody knows where it's been, so I decided to see if I could find out. The fact that it was sold at Christie's, the auction house, to an anonymous bidder in the late 90s, has obviously led to quite a lot of interest in the shield among football historians and like memorabilia heads. But that interest has always been piqued by the fact that the Sheriff of London Shield is absolutely massive. It's almost 6 foot high, it's over 3 foot wide, it's made of oak, it's covered in bronze, silver and gold gilding. If you won this thing, you risked serious injury trying to take it home.
I was just going to imagine the captain trying to lift it aloft their head. That's not going to happen, is it? 6 foot tall, did you say?
Yeah, I've actually seen a cartoon, like a little newspaper cartoon, riffing on that, showing a captain squashed underneath the shield after trying to lift it. Yeah, so it's 5 foot 9 3/4, I believe. We could sit here and try and describe the shield from the photos we've seen, you know, but why don't we hear from two people who were stood right next to it at the Corinthian Casuals centenary dinner in 1983. It's Brian Butler, who was recording for Sport on 4, BBC radio show, with the club chairman at the time, Bill Wixon.
Well, I'm standing now beside what must be the biggest football trophy in the world. It stands about 6 feet high, it's 4 feet wide, it's got a wooden surround, there are battle honours on an inner surround, and in the centre, in bold relief, we've got a plaque showing about a dozen footballers doing a lot of distinctly un-Corinthian things to each other. Now, Bill Wixon, surely the winning captains were never expected to hold this thing above their heads.
No, in fact, what they did in those days, they dragooned about four chaps from the touchline, who were very strong people, and it was their responsibility to make sure the shield was carried wherever it had to be taken.
But the episode isn't just about the trophy itself, because as you follow the story of the Sheriff of London Shield, you trace the changing identity of the club, beginning with the fact that it was the first prize the club agreed to play for. So to do that, the Corinthians had to overrule their own constitution, which they'd set back in 1883, and stated in it as rule number 7, the club shall not compete for any challenge cup or any prizes of any description whatever.
Right, so we've seen this in the club's early history, right? When they didn't enter the league and they didn't enter the FA Cup. The club now entering those things is a relatively new phenomenon.
Yeah, essentially they were saying Corinthians won't play for cups, for trophies. And it became the first rule the club amended as well in 1898 when they received an invitation to play an annual one-off game against the best professional team in the land in aid of charity. And that was for the Sheriff of London Shield.
So you say charity there, and it makes me think, is this the forebearer of the Charity Shield?
Yeah, and actually sometimes it's called the Sheriff of London Charity Shield. It was the prototype for that competition, but instead of the league winners playing the FA Cup winners, one of those two played the best amateur team in the country. It was named because the man behind it, Thomas Dewar, was one of the sheriffs of London at the time. And first ever Sheriff of London Shield match was Corinthians against Sheffield United, who were one of the best teams in the country at the time. And that game ended in a 0-0 draw. Then they had a replay and they drew it again. So they ended up just sharing the trophy. That was in 1898. From then on, up until 1907, they played some of the biggest teams in the country, apart from one year where they Queen's Park entered instead of them. You're talking Aston Villa, Tottenham, Liverpool, Newcastle. And the results ended up going quite badly for Corinthians. But there was one year in 1904 where they hammered Bury, who were the FA Cup winners at the time, 10-3. Blimey. And it was just a sign that the amateurs could still give the professionals a going over on their day.
So what happened in 1907 then?
Well, this was when there was a thing called the Great Split. And that was when some of the amateur teams, led by the Corinthians and including the Casuals, basically walked out of the FA. And it was all very complicated. We'd need another podcast to go into it. But it was essentially a fear that professionals had too much of a say in the running of the game now. And they were concerned it was all going to be run for the benefit of the wealthy clubs and to line the pockets of the owners so they could pay players more money and keep getting better, as they have done in football. So at the time, some of these amateur teams walked out. And it wasn't until 1914 that they rejoined. So in that period, they couldn't play against teams from the FA, professional teams, and so they couldn't play the Sheriff of London Shield. It came to an end.
So that was it? No more Sheriff of London Shield?
It's come back in brief periods over the course of history. The first one was in the 30s when for about 3 years they played it again because Charles Reefer Brown basically decided that it would be a good way to try and raise money for the Corinthians and raise their profile again. And they played Arsenal and Tottenham, I think, in that time. And by this point, they just weren't as good as the professional teams at all. And they were losing quite easily. And then no one really heard of the Shield again until the 60s, as you're going to hear from Bill Wixon here, when it turned up out of the blue.
In fact, 1934, when the Spurs won it, Arthur Rowe's captain, they put it down in one of their dungeons. Everybody forgot about it. And it was left there until 1964, when the chairman of Spurs found it and wrote to me and said, look, what are you going to do about it?
Right, so Tottenham want rid of the Sheriff of London Shield because it's taking up too much space in one of their quote-unquote dungeons.
Yeah, I don't think they knew what to do with it. They'd won it in 1934. It was irrelevant probably to anyone in current-day football in the 60s. And they maybe thought they were doing a nice thing as well, let's give them credit, by offering the Corinthians their shield back. Mm-hmm. Especially as Corinthian Casuals by this point were a hard-up non-league side that probably would have valued that kind of thing very highly.
So Casuals took the shield, did they?
They took the shield and they sensed an opportunity, didn't they? Because this is a nomadic club now, no ground, no money, playing in non-league. They're no longer able to kind of draw the big crowds for major games. And suddenly they've got this opportunity to say to one of the top professional teams, do you want to play in a friendly game for the Sheriff of London Shield? And it just adds a bit more interest to a post or pre-season friendly for one of those clubs. So they, a bit like in the 30s, they brought it back for 3 years and realised they were getting battered. They lost 7-0 to Arsenal in 1964. Then they lost 5-2 to Arsenal in 1965. I think the first thing that jumps out at me about that is that they didn't offer to play Tottenham after they gave it back to them. They played Arsenal.
They played their most hated rivals.
And then in 1966, they lost 7-0 to Watford, who were in the third division south.
So are they playing these clubs based on them winning one of the professional trophies, you know, Arsenal or Watford, or is it...
Not anymore. They're just basically playing a professional team, and right, they're getting some pretty damning score lines.
Yeah.
Presumably, we played Watford in 1966 because we'd met them in the FA Cup first round the previous year, and that was the first time that Corinthian Casuals had ever reached the FA Cup proper. So I think it was more of a celebration of that. But to lose 7-0 in it was kind of seen as the death knell in it. And at that point, the competition really did fade away. It wasn't until the casual centenary year in 1983 that we played the one other Shield game. And that was a one-off against Graham Taylor's Watford at Vicarage Road.
So Watford again, we wanted to avenge the 7-0, did we?
Yeah, it felt that way. And they'd finished second in the league that year and reached the FA Cup final the next year. So they put a really strong side out against us. Andy Gray was playing for Corinthian Casuals in that game, so I asked him if he remembered it.
Oh, yeah, that was, I forgot about that one. That was another centenary game, because we wore the old 18, whatever the year was, we wore the long shorts and old Corinthian tops,
She wore a retro kit for the game?
Yeah, it was retro, yeah. Long shorts, the big long shorts, yeah.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I've seen a team photo from that game of Watford, and they were in an old-fashioned kit, and I genuinely thought it was just for the photo.
I would love to get some pictures of... I haven't even got any, to be honest with you. I haven't got any, but there should be pictures of that particular game.
Why don't we do our best to find them? Because we looked and we didn't have them here, but they may be... Someone must have them.
Yeah, someone's got them because it was a big. I think we had about 7,000-8,000 people there. It could have been more.
Yeah.
And the ironic thing about that, Taylor buys me, didn't he? Like 6 years later. Yeah.
What was he like, Graham Taylor?
He was good. Just positive. Just the way he spoke. You know what I mean? You won games before you even played them. He just told you, if you believe in what I say, this will happen, and it did, 9 times out of 10. So, yeah.
Interesting stuff. I mean, it seems he can't really recall the actual context of the game, the shield itself.
No, but he remembers playing in the old-fashioned kit. And actually, the game Andy remembers was a proper novelty game. It didn't feel like a serious Sheriff of London shield match. And the fact that it stands alone as a date, you know, they weren't playing either side of it, kind of bears that out. Graham Taylor started the game, stood on the touchline in a bowler hat, three-piece Victorian gentleman's suit with a fake moustache, which they described in the local paper the next day as a Hitler moustache.
Let's call it a Charlie Chaplin, shall we?
Yeah, I think we should. But he ended the game on the pitch after bringing himself on for a laugh, and he had his hair slicked back in the old-fashioned style. So the teams didn't just wear retro kit. They played a 2-3-5 formation, like they had done at the turn of the century in the original Sheriff of London Shield days. Watford were wearing their old colours, which are yellow, green and red hoops. And it was all very much like the football equivalent of one of those historical reenactments. You know, at one point, Pat Rice, who was the Watford captain, he feigned injury so the physio could run on. And the physio ran and threw a bucket of water in his face like a circus.
It sounds like a great day out.
I mean, yeah. I mean, in the end, we lost 6-1. But they had 7 first-team players out Watford and they nearly won the league that year.
And they were playing their favourite 2-3-5 formation.
But our only goal came after Graham Taylor gave away a stupid penalty, a pity penalty, basically.
Ah, I see.
Our goalkeeper, Chris Chapman, ran up to score it, which, if you think about it, is ironic because it's about the only aspect of the game that didn't pay attention to the Corinthian traditions because we actually took and scored a penalty.
Love it.
So for a period after that game, the shield was in the Watford Museum or maybe even in like the corporate hospitality suites. It was at Vicarage Road essentially for a little while, and eventually when they handed it back to Corinthian Casuals, we had our own home by that time in Tolworth here. You know, as you'll know by looking around you, there weren't many places that you could keep a 6-foot oak shield here, so it kind of became a bit of a white elephant. Like, no one knew what to do with it. I spoke to Brian Wakefield, who was on the committee at the time, about this.
Well, it was difficult knowing what to do with it because I don't know whether you ever saw a photo of it or saw the actual trophy, but it was an ugly thing, and it was about 5 foot high, 3 foot wide, and it had no beauty at all. It was difficult knowing where to keep it, and I'm not sure where the idea came from, but it was suggested that we might put it up for sale and help to fund the club. There wasn't any real opposition to it. I mean, it wasn't serving any purpose. We couldn't display it anywhere. And so that's how it came about. We approached Christie's.
What state were the coffers in at that time?
Desperate. Desperate. Members of the committee were having to fund... to fund the club to keep it alive. There's no regular source of income. Our saviour, really, at the time.
David Harrison's another committee member who was around at that time, and he recalls the dire straits the club found itself in all too well.
Of course, I remember very well the time when we were all putting our hands in our pockets, because it's not to say people like the chairman today haven't done more, but there was a time when we were funding all sorts of things to keep it going.
Do you remember when the shield went to Christie's?
Well, yes, that was sort of a sad day. I mean, that we felt that we were so far in the red that we had to sell something like that. I mean, that was pretty disappointing. I don't remember the exact moment, but I remember the general thoughts about it.
The Shield was sold for around £29,000 at auction when you tag on buyer fees, which was a record for sports memorabilia at the time. I asked Brian Wakefield how the club reacted to that.
It was staggering. It was staggering. Absolutely. Interestingly, when I was en route to Glasgow, or when I was there, I had a plea from the FA saying, this is the crown jewel, don't sell it. And I said, it's too late. It's a committed decision to sell it. And of course, what we got was staggering and helped to fill the coffers.
Some interesting stuff there. So the FA pleaded with the Corinthians not to sell the trophy, which beggars the question, why didn't they buy it themselves?
I know, I thought exactly the same thing. I thought they've said to the committee of a cash-strapped non-league club, please don't sell this expensive trophy that will help keep you afloat because it's really important to us. And then, I don't know, presumably they didn't buy it because it didn't appear at any of their exhibitions or in any of their museums or anything like that. And we've since found out who does own it, and it isn't the FA.
Yeah, Dom, you've been on the case for the hunt for the Shield, haven't you?
Yeah, we called this episode The Search for the Shield for a reason. I got my detective instincts going and decided to track it down. I love nothing more than a football history mystery.
Well, let's solve that mystery after the break.
Hi, Dom here. We just wanted to remind you that the Broadway to Brazil book is available now. Published by Kingston University Press, the book tells the story of Series 1, in which we followed the club during a dramatic promotion campaign. We were there for the action, got to know the players and management who were performing miracles, and also delved into the incredible history of the Corinthian Casuals. Complemented by the wonderful photography of Stuart Tree, the book helps bring the podcast to life in a different way, and we think you'll really enjoy it. It's available from most major online book retailers, with more details on our website, broadwaytobrazil.com.
So, searching for the buyer of the Shield, how'd you go about that?
Well, I'd heard a few years ago that the club had sold the Shield, and one evening at a game here at Casuals, I remember Roger Stringer, probably our most loyal supporter.
Yeah, big up Roger.
Coming up to me in the bar and saying he'd heard a rumour Elton John was the owner. And I thought that makes sense. Played Watford in the last one when Elton John was owner. Given Elton's a football man, he might be prepared to give it back to us. You never know. You know, he might see the romance in that. And that was Roger's thought. He said, why don't you see if you can get in touch through Watford? Maybe they'll give it to us on loan for a display or something, anything.
Hmm.
Thought it couldn't do any harm to try. So I asked a friend who used to work at Watford if he knew anyone there that might be able to help me. Before long, their head of media told me he'd heard about the Shield and that a colleague of his at Watford had seen it at Vicarage Road.
I'm enjoying Detective Dom, by the way.
I've got my deerstalker on. So I started to believe that either Watford or Elton John did own it. But in the end, it turned out that the guy who had seen it was going back a few years, and that had been when Watford had displayed it briefly after they won it in the 80s, before they gave it back to the Casuals to sell. So I was on the trail now, even though that kind of lead had gone cold. So in January 2020, I put a tweet out, knowing that a fair few football journalists and historians follow me, and some very knowledgeable historians immediately started commenting. I found out Christie's had kept the identity of the winning bidder a secret, and so I had to write an open letter to them to give to the person who'd won the bid, which you can do. So I sent off the letter, waited patiently, and a few weeks later, I received an email from the person who owns the Sheriff of London Shield.
Ah.
And he was happy to talk. So let's hear from him now. First of all, before we start talking about Corinthian Casuals and the Sheriff of London Shield, could you tell us a bit about yourself, who you are and what you do?
Yeah, sure. My name is Massimo Ferragamo, and I work very closely for many years with my family, running the Salvatore Ferragamo business worldwide. That is obviously my family. Myself, I've been in charge of US operations, and today I'm the chairman of the US company.
Are you a football fan as well?
I unfortunately, yes. I say unfortunately because I suffer, like many people do when they are rooting for a team, and I was born in Florence, so my team has had ups and downs, and the name obviously is Fiorentina, But the team, you know, is a great team and I would never change it. So yes, I am a fan and I'm crazy for the sport.
So, you tracked him down, the owner of the Sheriff of London Shield, Massimo Ferragamo. Sounds like he's really into his football, actually.
Yeah, he clearly loves the sport. Also, their family name is a huge brand in the fashion world, which obviously he was too modest to say. I know you own at least 5 pairs of Ferragamo shoes, Eric.
At least 5, yeah.
So it was quite surprising to find out he was the owner of this piece of football heritage. But he's done his homework on the Corinthians and also had the trophy properly restored. He's taken care of it, as you'll hear now when I asked him about how he came to buy the shield.
I saw this object and I was taken aside. You know, I do have a passion for old soccer trophies and also silver trophies and shields. And so in the beginning, I was looking more like an object. I couldn't believe, I'd never seen in my life a shield so big. And actually, I would bet that this must be the biggest one that there is in the world. And so I was intrigued by it. And then when I saw the names of the teams, then I started focusing more on the history. And really, really, I was amazed that there was something like this coming up for auction.
What do you remember about the day of the auction? It seems that the value that the auctioneers gave it and the price that it went for were quite different. Was there a lot of competition?
Well, unfortunately, I was not in the room, but that doesn't change much because I remember I was bidding early in the morning from New York. And I have to tell you a small anecdote. My wife knows me very well, and so, you know, very often catalogs arrive and she goes through them before I do. So she hides them from me because she doesn't want me to buy more trophies. But this one, when she saw it, she said, "Oi, oi, Massimo, you are going to get hurt here." Again, it's an expression in Italian that says, like, you're going to get hurt in the sense you're going to spend every what it takes to get this. So I said, "Why? What is it?" I said, "Look at this." And so I saw it. And I said, "Oh boy, yeah, you are right." I said, it's going to be painful. But I wasn't going to let it go for any amount, relatively speaking, obviously, and like that. And right now, actually, Dominic, memory fades me. What was the estimate of the price?
I think the estimate was £8,000 to £9,000. And the price was £29,000.
That I remember well. The winning price I remember well. They definitely put a price on it that was not reflective of the object.
Let's talk about the shield itself. How proud are you of it?
I'm very proud to have it. I feel I have to caretake this piece in a good way, and like that. But I'm really proud of who made it. I'm in admiration, let's say, of who made it. And I obviously started researching. I have, you know, a small encyclopedia of football in those days where it talks about the Corinthians. And then I got out of the internet, I got fabulous pictures that I keep with a shield of the team with the shield displayed. And, you know, you see the players, it's high like a player. It's, you know, it's almost 6 foot tall. And so it is, you know, beautiful piece. And needless to say, I'm very happy to own it.
I was very pleased to when you sent me photographs to show me that you'd restored it as well to its former glory.
Right next to my house, there's the most unbelievable silversmith that you can imagine. Small little shop, and it's been there for like, you know, 80 years. And so, you know, when I get a trophy, they're always either a little bit banged or they need to be, you know, something needs to be done. So I generally bring them there and they do an amazing, amazing job because they don't ruin the patina of it because it's good to show the antique values of it. You don't want it to look new.
Well, that's a conveniently placed antique silversmith, isn't it? Right, so Dom, is that it? Is that the end of the story with the Sheriff of London Shield?
Well, not exactly. As you know, I don't like to let things lie. So I had liked the idea of maybe resurrecting the competition, playing it again, getting the Sheriff of London shield back out again.
Yeah, how did Massimo feel about getting his 6 foot shield over for a game?
It's a bit cheeky because obviously this guy's got this treasured possession now and it will cost an enormous amount of money in insurance and shipping and everything to get it over here. But, you know, I had raised it in my initial contact with him and I raised it again on air. Well, here's the final part of the story, isn't it? Either we have to come to Florence and play for the trophy over there, Or, we have to find a way to bring you and the trophy to London so we could play for it again here. But one day, the dream is to have the Sheriff of London Shield back one more time.
Absolutely. I'm just curious to know if you think in any way it would be possible to have a game in London where you play against the winners of the Premier League.
Oh, no, almost impossible. But possibly we could play against them as a friendly game if we could make enough noise, you know, make enough of a story about it. We could possibly convince someone to send a team in a friendly game, but they probably wouldn't put their first team out if we did. In 2004, we played Manchester United because it was 100 years since we beat them by a record amount. So their record defeat is to Corinthians. And 100 years later, they decided to honour that piece of history by playing us again. There is a chance you could have something like that, but to guarantee it's impossible.
Yes, no. I'm sure. Anyway, I always like to think big because there's always time to come back down. But it's good, you know, if you don't think high, you don't reach high. So it'll be interesting to see what we can do.
The one idea that we did have that would be very possible is that two or three of the teams they played in the Sheriff of London Shield are now smaller teams. They were big then and now they're not so big. So we could recreate those games more easily. As you say, there's always, if you dream big, there's always something else that you can come down for.
Absolutely. I'm always open to helping if there was in the future an event or something or like that. I mean, keep in mind, you have a friend over here, a friend of the Corinthians and yours. And, you know, anytime you want to come and see it or you want to do something, you know, we can always talk about it.
Magnificent. Massimo, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for yours. And it was a pleasure talking to you.
So it sounds like he's open to the idea, at least.
Yeah, I think finance is the only thing that are going to get in the way because you're looking at something like £20,000 to ensure a trophy like that, or the price of it.
Yes.
So whatever it is, £30,000.
Finance and logistics, just moving the thing.
And yeah, exactly. The travel for that, the shipping is going to be a lot. So I think that's the main issue. But we talked a bit about some of the clubs being a little down on their luck these days that played in the original Sheriff of London Shield games. And, you know, perhaps I was a little bit generic there because I can only really think of Bury. But Bury obviously have gone out of business and reformed as a Phoenix club since then, Bury AFC. They play, I think, three tiers lower than us. And they're obviously well supported. They're going to go up the leagues quickly like all Phoenix clubs do. And it feels like in the next couple of years, there's going to be an opportunity for us to play like a rematch of the Corinthians v Bury Sheriff of London Shield as equals. And it would still be amateurs versus semi-professionals. And it would be recreating history, but also kind of forming a bond with a club that we want to help out and who we have this great link with through this strange tournament. So the hope is that those discussions go well. Either way, it'd be a historic match and a game between an amateur club and some paid players, whether they be pro or semi-pro. All we need now is for someone to pay the insurance on Massimo's treasured shield, and we'll work on that. Any sponsors out there?
Just going to say, generous benefactors, your support is very much welcome.
So let's wrap up the episode by saying, if you want to sponsor the Sheriff of London Shield, or if you know where Andy Gray can find some photos of that game in 1983 at Vicarage Road, please do get in touch. Otherwise, we'll see you next week.
Right, so that's the story of the Shield. Thank you so much for that, Dom.
No problem.
So next week on Broadway to Brazil, we're going to be looking at an intriguing tale of Cold War diplomacy when the Russians came to town.
Got John Le Carré coming in.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, so that's next week's Broadway to Brazil. Look out for that. And until then, see you next week. Next time on Broadway to Brazil.
Just could not get the ball off them. Every single pass was defeat. I mean, the goalkeeper was half volleying balls 60 yards across the pitch, straight defeat. No sort of bouncing in between. It was just incredible.
They had a lot to drink and the bar was full of smoke and they stole all the ashtrays.
Two teams playing against each other who have this background, it's really about sport. It's not even about the game itself, it's about sport, right? And really being good sportsmen.
Broadway to Brazil is produced and presented by Yarick Zaba and Dominic Bliss, with editing by Yarick Zaba. Brent Davies is our audio engineer, and our title music is by John Forrest. Matt Alabuster did our artwork, and Chris Kelly manages the website. Further thanks go to Gillian Townsend for providing archive audio for this episode, with additional thanks to Robin Hutchinson and the Community Brain, and everyone at Corinthian Casuals Football Club. Broadway to Brazil is part of the Highway 61 network.
Follow Broadway to Brazil on Twitter, at Broadway to Brazil, with the number 2 in the middle. And remember, the Broadway to Brazil book is available now, telling the story of Series 1 with fabulous photos from Stuart Tree. You can buy the Broadway to Brazil book from any number of online retailers. Head to BroadwayToBrazil.com for more info.
Are you introducing it in any way? Are you just...
Well, we've made a discovery in the boardroom while we're recording one of the episodes tonight. I haven't opened it yet, so this could be massive live disappointment. I'm with Tony Banks and Stuart Tree, and it looks like a poster, an original, for the 1965 FA Cup first round tie.
Oh, wow. It looks
between
really...
Corinthian Casuals and Watford.
Wow. That looks quite delicate as well.
This does look delicate.
Genuinely yeah. Bricking it.
This is definitely no replica.
Really don't want to break
wow,
it.
Let's get that this. Sound. Let's get that sound of it coming out the tube.
Hold the tube, please, Dale.
Dom,
I'm the least.
Oh, look at this.
Oh my word. Ah, it's a pink, I don't know what you call it, A0 poster.
Look at that.
With blue writing, old school.
Has to be framed.
Footballer champion here.
Hill, Corinthian Casuals versus Watford.
First round proper FA Challenge Cup, Saturday 13th of November, KO 3 p.m.
Admission to ground, boys, £2.
Two shillings.
Adults, four.
Was that expensive for the time, Tony?
Well, you've got to save up. You make sacrifices, don't you?
Genuinely, this is the first ever FA Cup proper game that Corinthian Casuals played, and one of only two, or three actually, because one went to a replay.
Wow, this is
pretty impressive, though, against Watford.
Beautiful. Honestly, that really needs to be framed. And
it does, doesn't it?
We'll get it up on the wall in the clubhouse. We'll definitely do that.
It looks so delicate.
Currently. Sort of bricking it about having this open. I kind of want to
roll it back up is going to be where the joy really is.
Okay. Do you have more delicate hands than me, Stuart?
It feels so delicate.
Close to breaking at any given
Does
point.
It?
Yeah.
It's probably right moment of truth.
Oh, no.
This is where it goes.
That's all right.
There you go.
We're good.
That's a smooth noise.
This is so wrong.
Lovely. Well done.